Chapter 45. Steady Progress. Progress is born of experience. Mary Baker Eddy, 1884. May of 1884 found Sarah Cross and Calvin Fry in the West with their teacher, Julia Bartlett in charge of the college, and the journal in the very capable hands of Mrs. Emma Hopkins, who had studied with Mrs. Eddy the previous December. A card in the June issue read, "The editor of the Journal of Christian Science, having been called to Chicago in the interest of the science, the arrangement of the present number of the journal was left in care of a student, to whose charge all imperfections and errors may be laid. E. H." The students who assembled in Chicago on the 13th of May came also from surrounding areas and included a Universalist clergyman and an M.D. If any had felt that the tuition of $300 was a high price to pay, they soon had a change of heart. In expressing her feelings, Mrs. Emma MacDonald typified all of Mrs. Eddy's loyal students, and even many who were disloyal. Mrs. MacDonald wrote home to her attorney husband in Green Bay, Wisconsin, after the sixth lesson. "This grows more glorious every day. It seems to me now as though I was blind before, when I used to sit down and read the Bible. This science makes God and the Bible a reality. The more I read, the more I want to. In all the preaching I have ever listened to, I have never gained as clear a light as these six lessons have given me. If I went back home today, I should feel as if I were repaid for all time and money. I would not give up the light I have for twice 300. I cannot write half I want to. Perhaps I cannot say it all when I get home. I must live it." The Sawyers expected Mrs. Eddy to come on to Milwaukee to teach another class. After learning that that would not be the case, they arrived in Chicago for the last five lessons, together with Mr. and Mrs. A.J. Swartz and two or three others. Following the course, Mrs. Laura Sargent went home to Oconto, Wisconsin, so inspired by the teaching that before long her town became the first in all the world to erect an edifice for Christian Science services. But all the teaching did not fall on fertile ground. Quote, "Some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit." End quote. The first from this assemblage to choke out the word of God was A.J. Swartz, and later Ursula Justafield. Mr. Swartz began immediately to organize classes of his own, and he wrote Mrs. Eddy at great length. In his epistles, he said, "Your visit here was prolific of good. Your teachings were the true bread. The soil was ready, and now the harvest is ripening, and the gathering is to be abundant. You have the truth, and I rejoice to see you unmovable. All my classes are well unfolded spiritually. They tell to anxious ones the fullness of the new higher truths, and tell all that it is not to be confounded with spiritualism or mediumship. Good, and no class I teach shall hear me lower the standard. I do not allow mediumship or its cohorts dragged into the metaphysics taught in my class. Mrs. Eddy had told Dr. Sawyer and other of her students to begin teaching, but A.J. Swartz was not one of those students. Only 5 lessons, and those the last 5, scarcely qualified him as one of her students, and certainly not as a teacher. But even more, the seed had not been sown in an honest heart. Perhaps Swartz's activity caused the leader to designate qualified teachers, for she began the first normal class in the college on the 8th of August. The class consisted of 10 of her older students, including Julia Bartlett, Arthur Buswell, Calvin Fry, and Delia Manley. Mrs. Reed of Roxbury, Massachusetts, was the first student to advertise her classes in the journal, but Julia Bartlett was the first normal teacher to hold a class. By the time Miss Bartlett's class convened, Mr. Swartz had issued a circular offering a course of instruction to be, quote, chiefly as taught by the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, end quote, which course was to include, quote, mediumship, clairvoyance, and magnetism, end quote. He offered his 12-lesson course for $12 and compared this with the Boston price, which he noted, quote, seems much like extortion and speculation in truth, end quote. The 5 lessons he had attended had been given him gratuitously by the teacher. What a mockery of appreciation and gratitude. The leader often tested the fitness of her students. Whether or not she had done so with Swartz, his unfitness was out in the open for all to see. Mrs. Hopkins' responsibility for the journal may have been just such a test of her qualifications, and she had measured up to expectations. Mrs. Eddy made her the editor, beginning with the September issue, when she also made the journal a monthly publication. About the time of Mrs. Hopkins's first issue and Swartz circular, Mrs. Eddy was engaged in teaching a primary class at the college. This was followed by another, 2 months later. Before the latter class convened, on November 3rd, Mrs. Eddy contacted Augusta Stetson, whose reminiscences state, about the 1st of November, 1884, I received a note from Mrs. Eddy, telling me that a class was to convene in the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, and that she wished me to become a member of it. I went to see her and told her that it would be impossible for me to enter a class, that I had spent much money and all my time during a year and a half in preparing myself to become a public reader and lecturer, and that my engagements were many and immediate. One engagement in particular would come during the class term, and as I was to appear with Professor George Blish of the Boston Blish School of Oratory, I felt that there was too much at issue for me to devote my time to the study of Christian Science, which, I confessed, had little interest for me. Mrs. Eddy then informed me that the class lessons would be from 10 until 1 o'clock, and that the engagements I had mentioned would come later than the class hours, so she saw no reason why I could not fill all my engagements and also take class instruction at the college. The question of tuition, which was $300, then arose. I told Mrs. Eddy that I did not feel that I could pay $300 to study a subject which I might not care to accept. She replied that I need not pay the tuition, that she had many students whom she taught gratuitously, and she felt sure that after I had gone through a class, I would see that Christian Science was the science and truth of being. Upon Mrs. Eddy's assurance that my engagement at Tremont Temple would not be interfered with and that there was no tuition to be paid, I agreed to enter her class and attended 12 lessons. While Augustus's eyes were being opened to a new world, another disciple was coming to this new world through an entirely different approach. Ira Knapp had sought Christian Science healing for his wife the previous spring and had found it. But her miraculous recovery was only the bugle call to thought. Mr. Knapp wrote in retrospect to Mrs. Eddy, "Some years ago, before I knew Christian Science, I had a vision in a dream. Heaven, with all its splendor of light, seemed to open to me, but this was only for a moment, for I awoke in this dream and wept and prayed because I could not abide there forever." Time passed on until one day Christian Science dropped down at our door to speak a word of peace. And in my glad moments, I exclaimed, "It brings a message of love." To my surprise, a voice, nothing like a human voice, answered and said, "Where shall I abide? Your house is occupied. Turn out your old tenants and put on one measure of humility and another measure and yet another measure, and then I will abide with you, and charity will abide with you." I pondered this a few days and applied to you for instruction. Early one morning, I was again surprised with what seemed a mighty rushing wind, which no man could stay. It made the earth as a desert, and left me bare and naked. But before me was a great rock, square and upright, and on its sides the word truth appeared. On this rock I saw that I must build. Not long after applying to Mrs. Eddy for instruction, the Knapps received a telegram stating that their class would begin on the 22nd of December. The message was sent from Boston, December 16th. The teacher gave students sufficient notice for making arrangements and the necessary travel time, but endeavored to allow no spare time for gossip and conjecture with friends and family. After the third lesson, Mrs. Eddy often assigned homework in healing to the class. Bliss Knapp recorded his parents' experience in this December class of 1884. One day during class, Mrs. Eddy asked every student to find a patient and report his healing the next day. Now, most of those pupils were strangers in the city, and the chief difficulty lay in finding their patients. Mr. Knapp voiced his perplexity to his landlady when he returned to his lodging house, and she remarked at once, "You can heal me, for I am totally deaf in one ear. In his joy at having found a patient, Mr. Knapp rushed up to his room, and in a burst of spiritual illumination, he exclaimed, "In all the realm of the real, there is no such thing as deafness." The woman immediately ran up the stairs after him, declaring, "I am healed." She said there was a report in that ear like a pistol shot, and her healing was instantaneous. When Mrs. Eddy made this request of the class for cases of healing, Mrs. Knapp remarked, "Oh, I am not good enough to do that." After Mrs. Knapp returned to the lodging house that day, she was passing along the hall and through an open door, heard someone groaning. She entered the room and found a woman who had been suffering severely for some time. The woman welcomed any help that Mrs. Knapp could give her, and in one treatment, the patient was healed. Next day, when Mrs. Knapp was telling in class of this healing, Mrs. Eddy commented, "And you are the little woman who said you were not good enough to do that." Another member of the class sat up all night with a morphine patient and healed him in time to report the case next day. Every member of that class but one found his patient and healed him in the required time. As the mantle of Elijah fell upon Elisha, so Mrs. Eddy poured out her spirit upon her pupils. Two of the pupils had been members of the Chicago class the previous May and had come for additional instruction. They were Mrs. Emma McDonald and Mrs. Laura Sargent, and with them had come Laura's sister, Mrs. Victoria Sargent. A newcomer to Christian Science who attended this December class was Captain Joseph Eastman, whose introduction to the subject was very interesting. His last voyage, after 21 years as a sea captain, was home from Peru to Boston to join his invalid wife. His colorful story is better told in the captain's own words. "Upon my arrival, I found her much lower than I had supposed, and the consultations of physicians immediately secured only made it evident that she could not live long. One evening, as I was sitting hopeless at my wife's bedside, a friend called and asked, 'Captain, why don't you get a Christian Scientist to treat your wife?' To my inquiry as to what that was, she replied that she did not know, but had heard that they healed many cases without medicine. 'Anything that will heal my wife, I will get if it takes all I own in the world,' I replied. So, like a drowning man grasping at a straw, with alternating hopes and fears besieging me on the way, I went to the college. In answer to my request for a personal interview, Mrs. Eddy kindly granted me an extended audience, though to my appeal for help, she made the gentle announcement that she herself did not now take patients. At this, my heart failed utterly, for I felt that none less than the founder was equal to the healing necessary in my case. As I was about to leave, she turned to me and said with much earnestness, "Captain, why don't you heal your wife yourself?" I stammered out How can I heal my wife? Have I not procured the best medical aid? What more can I do? Gently, she said, learn how to heal. Without hesitation, I returned to the parlor for particulars. It seemed to me that it must require years of studying to learn Christian Science. And she whom I was trying to save would not long be here. But when I heard that the entire term required but 3 weeks, I gathered courage and asked about tuition fees, which proved to be very reasonable. In 20 minutes more, I had arranged to enter the class, about to open on the third day following. My wife proved much averse to the plan, having, in addition to her fears with regard to spiritualism, due caution on account of the already heavy financial drain occasioned by her prolonged illness. I was ready to spend every dollar to save her, however, and continued firm in my resolve to go through the class. How much was due to my own changed thought, I cannot tell. But after Christian Science was recognized in our house, even before I entered the college, my wife began to recover. Soon as I understood the rudiments, I began to treat her, and so quickly did she respond to the treatment that she was able to avail herself of the kind invitation of the teacher to accompany me to the final session. That one lesson dispelled her every doubt as to whether Christian Science had any kinship with mesmerism or spiritualism, for which she had strong antipathies. At the time Captain Eastman was treating and healing his wife, another new student was trying out her newfound knowledge, the woman who had come so reluctantly, Mrs. Augusta Stetson. Mrs. Stetson traveled to Maine to practice for 4 weeks for reasons she related. At the close of the class term, I thought I should like to test the power of Christian Science mind healing, but feared to do so among my own people, lest I should fail to demonstrate it. Though confident that the science was demonstrable, I doubted that one so young as I in the work would be able to prove it. Just at this time, a friend who was becoming interested in Christian Science called to see me. She told me that her father and mother, 75 and 76 years of age, were both condemned by physicians to hopeless invalidism, her father requiring an attendant to prevent him from falling. The mother was declared by the best specialists to be a paranoiac, and much of the time was crying. These were my first patients. The daughter encouraged me to take them, saying that they were aged and the physicians had given them up as hopeless. That even if I had not the understanding to heal them, it would be different from taking the cases of younger and more useful persons. At the end of 4 weeks, the old gentleman with his wife beside him drove his horses in a snowstorm to the Sunday morning service at his church. He was a prominent man in the city of Skowhegan, Maine. The people of Skowhegan had known of the condition of this couple for a long time, and their sudden change from helplessness to health so startled the town that the lame, the halt, and the blind rushed to me for help until I was overwhelmed with patience. 2 years earlier, a young Skowhegan girl, home from college, had fallen and from that time been unable to rise or stand. For 2 years, she had been in a helpless condition, being lifted from bed to chair. The family sought Mrs. Stetson's help, but once again, she felt inadequate. The conditions were reported to me by her brother, who came for me and asked me to go to her. The case seemed so serious that I feared to attempt it and refused to go. The next day, the mother came and pleaded with me to come to her daughter. The mother's pleading so touched my heart that I granted her wish. I saw the daughter and gave her a treatment. The next day, they came for me again, saying that the girl was greatly improved. This led to another treatment, and in 1 week, my patient was walking through the icy streets of Skowhegan. From this time forward, Mrs. Stetson found little time for anything other than Christian Science. She was not yet aware of it, but Mrs. Eddy's prophecy, quote, "You are going to do a great work in Christian Science," end quote, had begun its manifestation in her experience. An impressive member of the December class was Mrs. Josephine Curtis Woodbury. The Woodburys, who were socially prominent, had been interested in Christian Science for several years, Mr. Woodbury having been a member of Mrs. Eddy's first board of directors for the Massachusetts Metaphysical College in 1881. The talented and beautiful Mrs. Woodbury did not elect to study with Mrs. Eddy during the difficult pioneering days. But by the end of 1884, when the movement was flourishing, she decided to cast her lot with the scientists. Her speaking ability and unusually attractive presence were decided assets. There were traits of character that needed healing, but that was true of everyone. Deterrence to the necessary healing and moral progress for Mrs. Woodbury were theories in conflict with science, which she had previously studied, i.e. mesmerism under Professor Carpenter, and theosophy with Helen Blavatsky. But perhaps the greatest detriment to her spiritual growth was the fact that she concealed these former interests. Brought to the light of science, they could have been dispelled. Kept in the dark, they were nourished, foreboding ill for Josephine Woodbury and further trials for Mrs. Eddy and her cause.